Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Last week, Miami appeared on another one of those top 25 lists of U.S. cities. This list, though, wasn't about nightlife or restaurants or even the wealth gap. It was a list of U.S. cities most vulnerable to coastal flooding. Miami came in at number 2, just below New York City, on the ranking from Climate Central. The timing of the list's release could not have been better for supporters of the effort to have the city borrow hundreds of millions of dollars and use most of it to deal with flooding and the threat of rising seas. Miami voters will decide if they want to borrow $400 million, with half of it earmarked for flood control projects like stormwater pumps, raised roadways, and seawalls. But the city's police union says it should come first before any money for flooding. In a relatively quiet election season this year, the bond referendum is one of the ballot questions some local voters face focused on fundamental economic issues. In Miami Beach, it's not borrowing, but booze that is on the ballot. Beach voters will decide if there should be an earlier last call on a 10-block stretch of Ocean Drive for outdoor clubs. The question pits an economic engine of the tourism industry, Ocean Drive, against an effort to squeeze out the late-night partying and return the neighborhood to a quieter nightlife and restaurant scene. The two ballot measures are unrelated, but they focus on fundamental issues for the South Florida economy, the kind of hospitality industry we want, and facing the threat of climate change. The questions come as the economies of Miami and Miami Beach are doing well. The unemployment rate in Miami and Miami Beach, 4.6% last month, down more than 1% last year. 54,000 people report working now compared to a year ago. Roughly about 15% of the growth in employment in the state of Florida has happened in Miami-Dade County. That job growth underpins a positive financial outlook for the city and the beach. Valentina Gomez is an analyst at the credit rating agency Moody's.
So we think the outlook for the city going forward will remain positive.
Gomez follows the finances at Miami Beach City Hall and the city of Miami. For the city, new construction is key to her positive outlook.
Mostly due to the recovering economy in the city of Miami. They have a couple of large projects at the Port of Miami. The airport continues to do extremely well. They just finished the Brickell project, which is an over $1 billion project. And they have the World Center, which is going to be the largest hotel, an 1,800-room hotel that is still under construction, that would be the largest hotel in South Florida.
Valentina Gomez, the Moody's analyst following the city finances in Miami and Miami Beach. Now, Moody's does not comment on any proposed bond referendum until voters decide, so it has not made any financial calculations about an earlier last call for outdoor bars along Ocean Drive in Miami Beach or the potential of a $400 million taxpayer-backed bond in Miami. Gomez does say the climate change challenge, which portions of Miami's bond would go toward, is considered, particularly how it impacts the economic contributors to the city.
It's a much longer-term problem than we typically encounter in an outlook, but it is it's a long-term, you know, issue that they are going to have to deal with, and we continue to sort of monitor what the city is doing as well as how it's impacting the city. Is sea level rise causing tourism to low for some reason, or, you know, an issue that would, you know, sort of directly impact some of the strengths of the city.
So this is the economic background for voters in Miami and Miami Beach as they decide the fate of two bond referenda. It's back to tourism and real estate, two vital industries for South Florida and two that are the heart of ballot questions for voters in the city of Miami and on Miami Beach. So still to come, let's tackle the borrowing first. Miami wants to borrow $400 million, with almost half of the money going to fight flooding.
Something has to be done. We cannot just bet on luck.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, Booze and Borrowing, Election 2017. I'm Tom Hudson. Most of South Florida has no election day this year. There's only a handful of local city commission and mayoral races concentrated in Miami-Dade County. The races are in Hialeah, Homestead, Miami, and Miami Beach. Voters in the city will also find on their ballots a question asking them to allow the city of Miami to borrow $400 million. If okayed, the IOUs would replace other city debt as it matures in the years ahead. That's a key point for supporters who argue the borrowing will not lead to higher property taxes, but instead the cost of the new debt will just replace older debt as it gets paid off. The borrowing request also comes as the city of Miami enjoys its highest bond rating in 30 years. That means analysts think it's a good credit risk. And just like if you have a good credit and want to buy a car or a home, you get a lower interest rate than if you have bad credit. Now, the high rating comes after the city and a former budget director were accused of fraud for manipulating its finances during the Great Recession. A jury ruled a previous city administration moved money around to hide budget losses from bond investors. The city paid $1 million to settle the case. If this borrowing is approved, the $400 million is earmarked for five types of projects. The biggest is for sea level rise mitigation and flood protection, stuff like pumps, higher roadways, and seawalls. About a quarter of the borrowing would be for affordable housing, but what that means exactly isn't clear. The rest of the money would go toward parks, cultural facilities, road improvements, and public safety. When the City Commission narrowly approved the bond referendum on a 3-2 vote in July, Mayor Tomas Regalado called it a win for the future.
This is not a victory for the administration, for the record, for the media. This is a victory for the next generation of Miamians.
Now, that last vote there was Commissioner Francis Suarez. He voted against putting the bond up for a vote over concerns there just isn't enough specificity about how the city wants to spend the money. But if voters do approve the borrowing, he may be the leader deciding how to spend it. Suarez is the leading candidate for the mayor's office in Miami, the office Tomas Regalado is leaving after 8 years. Regalado hopes his embrace of addressing climate change will be his legacy for his administration. And for now, that comes down to wanting to borrow $400 million.
It's the right thing to do. It's the intelligent thing to do. It's a win-win situation because property taxes will not go up. It is because the city of Miami is in a good economic position that we can present this to the voter with the caveat written in the ballot that taxes won't increase. In fact, the ballot language is very clear. It says interest payable or below the maximum rate allowed by law payable from ad valorem taxes, levels on all taxable property in the city, provided that the capital projects debt millage not exceed the current rate of 0.5935. So what this means is that regardless of what the next mayor and the next administration and the next commission does in terms of selling those bonds in 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, this debt millage will not go up. This is the law.
Let's talk about the implications of this before we talk about the projects or where the money is going to go.
Right.
Some of the opposition on the Miami City Commission was that if it weren't for this bond referendum, taxes potentially could go down because the city debt load would be less because the city is owing less debt. While taxes aren't going to go up because of this bond referendum, if not for this $400 million in borrowing, City of Miami property owners could have seen taxes go down.
In the next 6-7 years, most likely. However, just recently, the police union had a very interesting idea. They asked that the city will issue bonds to pay them for the money that they say they lost.
Yeah.
So,
and the court says that they are owed something. They just haven't put a price on it. The court hasn't
right.
put a price
well,
on it.
Well, that's the court, no entity, no governmental entity had said anything about amount of money that supposedly the city owes. But going back to the bond issue,
right.
The city now is in the best economic position. Some people say, those who know economics, that when you are in good shape, you ask for a loan because it costs you less. I mean, we know that maybe in 2 years, maybe in 2 years and a half, construction is going to decelerate. We know that this construction boom is not going to be forever. We know that the tax base is not going to increase as much as we have in the last 4 or 5 years, which is 11%, which is unheard of in the history of the city of Miami. So this is the time to borrow, because eventually the next commissioners and the next mayors, we want to do affordable housing because we have to. Because rent in the city of Miami, it's unsustainable. So if they want to do affordable housing, somehow they're going to have to figure out to borrow some money. If the people in Brickell get to the point that demand a seawall that will stop the Quintay or the hurricanes, they're going to have to figure out how to get the money. So now is the time to borrow. And now is the time where we can start. We know I'm not going to be here, but the next mayors and the commissioner could start drawing plans to do something.
Is it rushed, though? And what I mean by that, Mayor Regalado, is in your final weeks in office, as you leave the mayoral office that you've occupied for a number of years, has this bond referendum been rushed in terms of where the money is likely to be spent? The list of projects has not been really articulated as these are the exact places where we need it. Is waiting for that something that would be more prudent?
No, absolutely no. Actually, a year and a half ago, the commission told us we're not going to put it in the ballot.
Right, that was the November 2016 election.
Right.
It did not come on the ballot.
Because it was rushed.
Right.
Go back to the people. Go back to the elected official. So for a year, the administration had meetings throughout the community, and they had a wish list. And all the elected officials, all of them, we had a wish list, and the administration did the numbers. It was up to $1 billion in project, from parks to streets to whatever. And then we brought back to the commission before the meeting the final product, and it turned out to be about almost $300 and some million. Now the commission at that time said okay, the majority said okay. But we're going to add more money
right.
to affordable housing.
Yeah, the commission wound up adding almost 25% more to the total
Correct.
Bond offering
Correct.
In order to get
affordable
three
housing.
Votes as well, in order to get three votes on
Absolutely.
The commission to approve the referendum for the November ballot.
Right, absolutely. And so the argument of the other two commissioners was, well, because this eventually could have reduced the taxes in the near future to the taxpayers of Miami. The real question is, first, do we have to do this? And second, do we have the money in the future? The first answer is yes, we have to do this eventually. You have to do affordable housing, and you have to do something about water pumps and seawalls and storm sewer. Actually, Tom, we lobby, all elected officials lobby Tallahassee the last session to get $1 million for a storm water master plan mm-hmm. with sea level rise component.
Yeah.
So we got that money. The governor didn't veto that bill. The city now has issued an RFP.
Yeah.
Now the
request for a proposal, you're waiting for that master plan to get finalized
exactly,
to see where you think
exactly.
and the experts think
so,
to put the pumps.
So, but it's important that we know that we have to wait for the master plan to be finalized.
But aren't you also kind of getting the mortgage before picking out the house you want to buy?
No,
here?
Absolutely not. Because so now is the time to get the mortgage because interest rates are low. And then what if we have this master plan and we don't have the money, or the city doesn't have the money? It will go into a drawer as the last master plan did. The only thing is that the last master plan of 8 years ago wasn't done with the sea level rise component. Mm-hmm. Something has to be done. We cannot just bet on luck. Hey, we were lucky because we didn't get a storm since Wilma and Katrina. So we figured that we got Wilma and Katrina in 2005. We didn't get anything until 2017, so we can live happily until 2027. Let's say that. That's betting on luck. However, the quintay is getting bigger and better and stronger every time that has happened. And that's something that eventually the next mayor and the next commission have to deal with, because you cannot just abandon a neighborhood.
What's the return on investment for Miami property owners if they approve the $400 million of borrowing?
I think the return is, number one, property values. Number two, a reduction on the insurance. Because when we start doing...
On flood insurance or,
yes,
or storm insurance?
Flood and storm insurance. Hmm. Because when we, the city, and I'm not speaking as a city because I'm not going to be there, but we plan for this, start doing repairs, street repairs. We will fix the streets in a way that the water would drain and not flood the houses. That would help. The coastal communities will be greatly impacted in a positive way, because you know what happened. We met with the residents in two condos from Brickell Bay Drive. Now, this is not Brickell. This is Brickell Bay Drive.
This is on
Biscayne. 15 Road and Southwest and Brickell Key.
And this is on Biscayne Bay.
And this is on the water.
Yeah.
And this is on the water. And the people were saying, hey, the Jade, which is a condo, very high end, has a higher seawall than we had. We got flooded and they didn't. And they push the water onto us. So these people have all the right in the world to demand from their government to protect their investment. Now, this is not going to be only for rich people. You know, they're people that live in near and the banks of the Miami River, also had issues with the quintay. Spring Garden has issue with the quintay.
Miami Mayor Tomas Regalado. While the move to ask voters for their okay to borrow the money faced opposition within the Miami City Commission, the chief opponent to the borrowing is the city's own police union. Still to come, we talk with the leader of the Miami Fraternal Order of Police about why it thinks money for police pay and pensions should come first.
There's other stuff right now that's it's higher priority for them to be using it. They don't even have a plan on how to use it. They just want the money to have it.
This is the Sunshine Economy, Booze and Borrowing, Election 2017. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Today we're talking about two separate ballot measures that go to the heart of two fundamental issues affecting all of South Florida, hospitality and the environment. Miami Beach voters will decide if 2 a.m. should be last call for alcohol along a stretch of Ocean Drive for outdoor clubs. We'll hear more about that later on in this program. Miami voters will decide if the city can borrow $400 million to pay for efforts to fight floodwaters, provide affordable housing, spruce up parks, and other items. Most of the money would go toward environmental resiliency projects like pumps to move stormwater and seawalls. Supporters wanted to ask for the money a year ago, but the effort stalled over concerns that the community had not been involved enough, and there just wasn't enough detail about how the money would be spent. Fast forward a year, and some of the same complaints were heard when the issue came back to the Miami City Commission. In late July, the original proposal from Mayor Tomas Regalado's administration was to borrow $300 million. That was the item on the agenda, but how it grew by 25% to the current $400 million is a lesson in politics. The debate started with the commission 2-3 against putting a $300 million bond referendum on the ballot. But then the amendments and negotiating began. This is Commission Vice Chair Ken Russell talking to Commissioner Keon Hardiman.
Would you, so that we don't raise it past a level of $400 million, which is still within our capacity, would you accept an $80 million instead of increasing up to $100 million for the affordable housing, and up to $80 million increase, which would be a 60 increase over what currently is there. $20 million could go toward the parks, and that would bring us to an even 400.
Russell was taking Hardeman's request for $100 million more dollars to be used for affordable housing and parks. The math got a little tortured there, but the idea was to add $80 million for housing and economic development, and then add another $20 million for parks and cultural facilities to bring the entire borrowing request up by $100 million to a total of $400 million. Now, this picks up with Commissioner Hardeman explaining his proposal for the new money. But he was soon interrupted by Commissioner Francis Suarez asking a question to Russell.
I thought that the 80 plus 20 is 400. That's what I described.
You want to increase
I described
the bond amount to 400?
We have the capacity to do it.
And with that, the borrowing proposal grew by 25% to secure a third vote in favor of it appearing on the ballot this fall. But Suarez and Commissioner Willie Gort remained skeptical, not of the need of the spending on seawalls, stormwater pumps, parks, and affordable housing, but with the process, and worried that they have one chance to convince voters to borrow the money. Here's Commissioner Gort.
My experience is, and send it to the voters, if we all don't five agree on this, we're not going to pass it. Because you're going to have two commissioners or three commissioners going and speaking against the bond issue, and that's not going to be very helpful at all. If you have all five commissioners agreeing to it, if you don't have that, it's going to be very difficult to pass it to the public.
The voice expressing skepticism about a unanimous vote by commissioners was Vice Chair Russell, who was pushing hard for the bond vote. This was back in July. Commissioner Suarez, who is running for Miami mayor, countered.
These are great priorities. Nobody disagrees. In fact, Commissioner Gort is right about something. We all agree on all these things. 5-0, we all agree that resiliency is important. 5-0, we agree that sea level rise is important. Okay? 5-0, we agree that flooding capacity issues are important, and parks are important, and affordable housing are important. All five of us agree on that. What we don't agree on is doing it this way, in a hurried fashion, simply for some unknown reason. Okay? And then pulling numbers out of the air, we're going to increase the bond thing by another $100 million, and no, that's not the way it's done.
But it was the way it was done. The commission wound up approving the measure 3-2 to put the borrowing question on the ballot. The issue of back pay and pension for police did not come up during the commissioner's debate over the bond. But that's what the police union argues, that the city should not borrow any money until it pays what it claims will be hundreds of millions of dollars in back wages and retirement contributions owed to the police union. Now, this claim goes back to actions the city took during the Great Recession, cutting police pay and benefits. The Florida Supreme Court ruled the city should not have done that, and now it's up to the Florida Public Employees Relations Commission to put a price tag on it. The Miami Police Union contends it could be $200 million or more and thinks it should be made whole before the city borrows any money to fight floodwaters or the high price of housing. Edward Lugo is the president of the Miami Fraternal Order of Police.
The reason that we're opposing the Miami Forever bond is a $400 million bond that Mayor Regalado is trying to push through. And right now, we have just gotten a PERC decision on a lawsuit that, in essence, will be a total of over $300 million that the city is going to have to address. And they have no way of funding it once that gets resolved. They should hold off on the bond, which is $400 million, because they're putting the taxpayers on the hook for that, while there's possible litigation that they're going to owe a lot more money.
So the court has ruled that the city does owe something because of changes that were made to police contracts back in 2009 and 2010, but they haven't put a price tag on it yet. You're estimating the $300 million price tag.
Correct. There's two parts to it. One of the parts is the pension part, that they would have to cover the pension obligation for all those years. That will be voted on November 2nd through the pension board. And then the other one is we have to go for a hearing to see how much money everybody is due.
Right. And so it could be $1, could be millions of dollars.
It could be millions of dollars. It can't be $1 because they owe 7 years worth of pay cuts.
But the court will decide how much, and then, of course, correct, that could be appealed either by the FOP and the officers' union or by the city, too.
Yeah, I think they go on a scale based on how much was taken away from them during that time period. That's how the court decides it.
So does the FOP have any opposition to the merits of the usage of the bond revenue should the referendum be approved? In other words, the sea level mitigation, the affordable housing, the parks and cultural ideas that the city council has talked about.
Yes, we object to the $300 million for flood prevention I was reading, they don't even know how they're going to use it. They want the $300 million to be approved by the voters, and then they want the voters to trust them to use it properly.
So it's a $400 million bond, yeah. About $200 million for sea level rise and flooding.
Yeah.
So the FOP does have problems with the merit of the bond itself.
Of course. They're using it, and they're telling the voters to trust them on how they're going to use the bond. But they don't have a plan. There's nothing. They said once we have the money, we'll know how to use it. Well, if you're going to create that bond, which we're against because there's other stuff right now that's more, it's higher priority for them to be using it. They don't even have a plan on how to use it. They just want the money to have it.
What happens, do you think, if the voters do approve this borrowing in November?
I think the city's credit's going to go bad. I think when they're inevitably going to have to pay us what they owe us, and I don't know how they're going to get another bond when they already have a $400 million one.
So this bond, the city has written into the referendum language that it will not increase the millage rate, so the property tax rate, because it is able to pay for the debt service at the current rate. So there's no additional cost to taxpayers. This won't be higher taxes necessarily.
That is correct. It won't be higher taxes the way they've written it up.
And if it's successful in November, and if the court decides that your union is owed the money and the city drops any appeal, that could lead to certainly a revenue squeeze, and that could lead presumably to the need for higher revenue, a.k.a. higher taxes in the city of Miami.
Yes, I would agree that would have to be one of the ways that they try to make up the money that will be owed.
And what if the money that's owed that the court decides is less than what you're anticipating?
Our number is actually a conservative number. I don't think it's going to be less, just off hindsight and what I've been told. I think it could possibly be more. I haven't said it because it's not. We're waiting for the court decision, but it could possibly be even more. It's 7 years of pay cuts for 1,300 officers, and that's not including the firefighters.
And what about the message to those folks that live in Shorecrest that deal with King Tide flooding, the neighborhood of Brickell that deals with rainy day flooding, and the ability to protect property in the city of Miami?
I'm going to say Miami Beach has spent $600 million on flood prevention. Mm-hmm. And during Hurricane Irma, everything got flooded. Nothing was solved.
That's not true. I mean, Miami Beach was not flooded during Hurricane Irma.
It had storm surge and lots of a lot of the roads were flooded, though, for a time being, not indefinitely, but they were temporarily flooded. And I think right now they have bigger issues than flood prevention. It's only $200 million they can allocate. I think they should allocate it when they have a plan in place as to how they are going to prevent the flooding. Right now, I know it's important, but they don't have a plan in place. They just want the money to have it.
And so your message to your officers, your constituency, and the city of Miami, as they look at this ballot referendum, look at borrowing $400 million, $100 million for affordable housing, $200 million for flood resiliency, and the rest spread between parks, cultural facilities, some public safety and roadway improvements.
I think that they should vote no. They should relook at it. When they originally put the bond up at the commission, it was $300 million. And at a whim, they added $100 million just because. I think they should look at it when they have an actual plan, incorporate and see how much it is that you're going to owe us. And then if there's room, then get another bond and do it properly. Have a plan in place. You get a certain amount of money and have it allocated for an idea, not just to say, we're going to have it here. We'll figure it out once we have it. Our goal is not to cause any unnecessary hardship on the city. All we want is for our membership to get what they've been promised and what the city promised when they were hired, and then that was taken away from them. It was contractual. That's all we want, but we don't want any hardship for the city. We would try to work with them and try to work it out.
Does this bond referendum, Edward, pit police against property owners in low-lying areas in the city?
I don't think so, because we're not against stopping flood prevention, but they don't have a plan in place. Right now, they just want the money, and once they have a plan in place and they have a correct amount of money that they need for that, we would not oppose it. I don't think it pins us against low-lying property owners.
Edward Lugo is the president of the Miami Fraternal Order of Police, which opposes the $400 million bond referendum on the ballot for Miami voters this election season. Still to come, the battle over booze into the early morning hours on Ocean Drive.
At the peak when there's lines in here and people coming on property, you'd be basically telling them that it's last call. They lose that brand recognition.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. We're talking about two bond referenda on ballots this election season for voters in Miami and Miami Beach. They're local issues, but the issues resonate across the region. The Miami question is over millions of dollars of borrowing to address flooding in parts of the city. In Miami Beach, it's the party brand image of South Beach against questions around the quality of life for residents. Ocean Drive isn't exactly quiet on a weekday morning. It's the din of delivery trucks unloading their wares to local restaurants and bars, which are just beginning to open up again after a late night of playing party host. This one-mile stretch of Ocean Drive is lined with Art Deco architecture, small hotels, bars, and clubs, and an occasional t-shirt and beach shop. They all face Loomis Park and then the sands of Miami Beach beyond. A few people are out in the mid-morning sun, sitting outside on front patios, under shade awnings or umbrellas, eating a late breakfast. Uber drivers are dotted along the drive, along with a few taxis. And just a few hours earlier, it may have been a much different scene, with the clubs, including those outdoors, serving alcohol until 5 a.m. This is the 10-block area that is the focus of a ballot question for Miami Beach voters. It asks if these clubs should have to stop the booze 3 hours earlier at 2 a.m. instead of 5 a.m. Bars that are completely enclosed or entirely inside hotels would still have the liquor flowing until 5 a.m. While there are 55 places on these blocks that serve alcohol, only 8 are still serving during the 3 hours in question outside. And 2 of them, the Clevelander and Mangoes, are among the biggest sellers of booze, bringing in $38 million combined in annual sales. In Miami Beach's tourist-dependent economy, the debate over last call has the potential for economic consequences, and it has produced competing economic analyses of what the impact may be. A study for the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association predicts the loss of alcohol sales during those 3 hours on the one-mile strip of Ocean Drive would lead to a $361 million hit to the regional economy. It argues the loss of late-night liquor sales will flow right through to lower hotel room rates, job cuts, a drop in property and rental prices, costing property values, and all leading to a hit for local tax revenue. But a separate preliminary analysis prepared for the city of Miami Beach calls that $361 million economic cost an overreach. It claims the earlier last call would mean a nominal financial cost to the city. Final analysis is expected to be presented to the Miami Beach City Commission tomorrow. In the meantime, early voting already is underway, and signs urging voters to vote against the earlier last call are up and down Ocean Drive, providing for residents a civic contrast to the carefree carousing by tourists. I met Mike Palma. He's the executive vice president of hospitality for the company that owns the Clevelander, the club that has the most at risk with the vote. After meeting inside the hotel, we walked out onto Ocean Drive.
What's going out?
Here we are on a Tuesday morning just before 10 a.m. and describe what this would look like at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning.
This is obviously the Sidewalk Cafe on Ocean Drive right in front of the Clevelander. So it's obviously center of it all. This is where, in my opinion and most people's opinion, where the central energy and population gathers. So any, after 2, 3, 4 a.m., there is a huge amount of people that are both walking up and down the strip and or coming into the venues, including Clevelander, Mangoes, Ocean's 10. So it really is the center of the nightlife.
What does this represent in terms of the business of the Clevelander?
Yeah, obviously there's no hidden secret. This is about 90% of what we do in a food and beverage arena. So it's a huge part of our business. And more importantly, it's a huge part of what the people that come here to visit want. And I think that's what the people are getting lost in translation, that this is punishing the good tourist and blaming it on crime. And that's unfortunate.
What do you mean by punishing the tourist? How is this referendum punishing the tourist?
Because they're using crime as a reason for the shutdown. But if you shut down the two most iconic places on the beach that people come from all over the world to come visit, you've now taken that ability for them to not enjoy that.
if this ban is supported and goes into effect, Mike, this, what we're looking at here, this outdoor venue shuts down, doesn't it?
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is that if this thing was to go into effect, it would be really a 2 a.m. closure, but people have to recognize that 2 a.m. means that you can no longer sell or consume. So really at 1:30, at the peak of when this gets going, at the peak when there's lines in here and people coming on property, you'd be basically telling them that it's last call. And that sends a huge negative message to not only the national visitors and the local visitors, but anyone who wants to come to the beach and utilize that, you know, that mentality of I can have a drink after 2 a.m., I can have fun. You lose all that. You lose that brand recognition.
If the Clevelander loses those 3 hours of serving, what does it lose in terms of revenue? And what does that mean in terms of employment for the Clevelander?
We've done the numbers, and, you know, the Clevelander employs 425 full and part-time employees, of which 12 to 15% are residents of Miami Beach. The day this goes into effect, we'll lose 120 employees. 120 employees will go home and get in unemployment lines just based on this one referendum.
So if you lose 3 hours of serving alcohol, you're gonna have to cut your full and part-time staff by more than 25%?
Yeah, unfortunately, because you gotta keep in mind that the nightlife portion of our business is substantial, but more importantly, that we have safety personnel that work nightlife. We have we have 57 bartenders on staff. 25 have to go away. We have 72 servers. Another 27 have to go away. So this has a trickle-down effect. And then when you take the actual sales, you know, the investment cycle wants their return. So your bottom line can't change. So it just comes down to squeezing a lemon. So it is a very unfortunate thing. And I think that's what's happening now is a lot of these businesses are realizing the trickle-down effect of this is going to have such a negative effect on the job status. And in fact, Philip Levine at one point in the day, as I don't remember when
last
year. The mayor of Miami Beach. He said, I don't believe it affects people's jobs. I think that's a lie. And I said, how can he believe that when you look at the income streams on this street and think about the correlation of who's actually serving and doing the work, how that would not affect jobs? It just blows me away.
If that ban goes into effect, what are the contingency plans that the Clevelander has made in terms of its business model beyond the employment changes it would have to make? Would it go in and essentially try to get permitting to construct this as an indoor area?
It's a great question. We're in a historic preservation district, so in essence, we're not allowed to do that. And I don't believe that the city would be able to even accomplish that. And it takes away, again, I don't think the Clevelander, if it was indoors, would be the Clevelander. I think there's an indoor portion that we have that's very small. And even on the busiest nights, you'll notice that people still want to be outside. So I think that's unheard of, and I don't think we can do that. And more importantly, you know, we're not going to change who we are or what we do. We just have to basically conform to a new way of conducting late night business.
What is this stretch of Ocean Drive for you, the Clevelander, and its investors represent?
Well, I mean, this is the American Riviera. I mean, we invested in this area for the very same reasons that we're being penalized or being attacked now, which is that it is a worldwide destination. It has a unique appeal to it. And the fact that you can kind of enjoy food, beverage, lifestyle until the wee hours of night is very attractive, you know, and I think that it's something that we found to be very interesting and we you know, had no problem investing in and would hate to see that be taken away. Again, there is how many places in the United States that close at 2 a.m.? We become just another location. And I think the sad state of affairs, Ocean Drive, Miami Beach cannot afford to become another just destination. It needs to be unique. It needs to protect that uniqueness. And the city needs to do its job and to protect the tourism that's happening here and not blame it on the businesses.
Is a 5 a.m. liquor last call important to that Miami Beach brand? And
you know,
is that something that Miami Beach ought to be selling globally?
I think, you know, the mentality is it's not that we serve every night till 5 a.m. and it's not that we want to keep people here till 5 a.m. But the mentality, the thought process, and when you go to Vegas, everyone says what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. That's a brand, whether we like it or not. Now, Miami has a feeling and a perception, both from the European and Latin American tourists and our local tourists and national tourists, that it's a place that you can stay out later, you can eat later, you can dance till the wee hours of the night. That is what it's known for. And by the way, that's what it was first known for before anyone came and lived here. Nightlife built the city. I'm not saying that it should take precedent, but it needs to be respected and understood that that's the brand. So it is hugely important to the brand.
Mike Palma with the Clevelander fighting to be able to keep serving alcohol at his outdoor club until 5 a.m. Still to come, trying to recast the image of Ocean Drive by cutting off the booze earlier at outdoor bars.
And I think it's a shame that, you know, Ocean Drive, one of the most iconic streets in all of America, is a place that residents don't go, that Miami Beach residents don't get to enjoy Ocean Drive because they view it as crime-plagued.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Early voting this election season is already underway in the few cities with elections. Miami Beach is one of those, with two commission seats and the mayor's office up for grabs. There are also two ballot questions. We're focusing on one of those today, whether to move up last call for alcohol from 5 a.m. to 2 a.m. at outdoor bars on a 10-block span of Ocean Drive. The effort has been led by those arguing the late-night partying has gotten out of control along with crime on the drive. Now, Miami Beach Commissioner Ricky Arriola is one of those supporting the earlier closing time.
I would say it's a morality issue. It's a crime issue. What we're trying to do is obviously get our arms around what has become a chronic problem in Miami Beach, specifically in the area surrounding Ocean Drive, where we've had a number of high-profile crimes being committed. The crime that's happening on Ocean Drive is actually hurting tourism in Miami Beach. It's scaring away tourists. It is bringing sort of a low-end element to Miami Beach that is hurting hotel revenues, depressing hotel room rates. It's hurting business in restaurants. It's hurting business in retail because people feel it's unsafe.
How have you been able to decipher the public safety concern, as you put it, compared to over the past year, Zika on Miami Beach, of course, the strong dollar overseas, which makes it more expensive for the international traveler to come to Miami Beach. And then, of course, you know, just storm season, Hurricane Irma and its impact on accommodations as well.
Yeah. So there's no doubt Miami Beach has had some strong headwinds. But, you know, what we're trying to do with this measure in trying to tackle the Ocean Drive problem is to lessen crime, get our arms around the situation, and we think that over the long term, it's actually going to be good for business, including the businesses on Ocean Drive, to the extent that we can actually sort of elevate tourism, the kind of tourists that come. I think it's going to be good for business. And I think it's a shame that, you know, Ocean Drive, one of the most iconic streets in all of America, is a place that residents don't go, that Miami Beach residents don't get to enjoy Ocean Drive because they view it as crime-plagued.
The data on crime in Ocean Drive shows that it's not higher concentrated in Ocean Drive than it is anywhere else. This ban of alcohol sales from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. would affect essentially a 10-block area of Ocean Drive, but not places that are a block, two block, three blocks away. So if there's not the concentration of crime there in terms of the statistics, and it's only located on these 10 blocks, how does that still justify the public safety concerns that you articulate?
The reality is Ocean Drive is what's attracting the mass of people. It's literally the street that everybody names when they think of Miami Beach, much like Times Square in New York City in the 70s or 80s, in a very small geographic area, but it was sort of the concentration for crime and grime in New York. Ocean Drive is the same thing. So whether there's crime happening a block or two away, it doesn't matter. It's Ocean Drive that attracts the people. It's got the heavy concentration of bars and restaurants, unlike the adjacent streets, Collins and Washington. And it's also the street where everyone likes to cruise back and forth. But for Ocean Drive, a lot of these people wouldn't be coming.
Will the city have fewer police patrols on that stretch of Ocean Drive if the alcohol last sale becomes 2 a.m. instead of the current 5 a.m.?
Not in the short term. We're going to continue to aggressively police the street. During the overlap shift from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. At night, 50% of our police force that's on duty is concentrated on Ocean Drive. So
Citywide.
When we get things under control, I'd like to see that police force deployed into our neighborhoods to keep our residents safe, because right now we're pulling police resources from our residential neighborhood simply to patrol Ocean Drive and monitor the businesses that are on Ocean Drive. The problem is resource allocation. Too much of our resources are concentrated on Ocean Drive currently, and basically that's a subsidy to the businesses that are operating on Ocean Drive. They get to make money, and the citizens get to pay the taxes to keep that area safe, and I don't think that's right.
Those businesses would argue, I suppose, Commissioner, that they pay property taxes and employment taxes and sales taxes that do go back into the general fund of the city.
Sure, but our residents also pay a lot in property taxes, and there's a lot of hotels and businesses that are not concentrated in Ocean Drive that also pay taxes, and they should enjoy the benefits of our police, our fire, and all the resources that we're, I think, overly concentrating on Ocean Drive because of what's going on there.
Describe your vision long-term of Ocean Drive and the entertainment district in South Beach.
Very easy. All you have to do is go back, you know, 20 years or so to the early and mid-90s when Ocean Drive and, you know, that surrounding area was sort of hip and world famous, and you had, you know, all the high-profile celebrities and movies being filmed there, commercials being filmed there, great restaurants, you know, and residents were going there. You know, now you don't see that anymore. I mean, now what you have on Ocean Drive is sort of a very low-end restaurant and bar experience where they're selling, you know, overpriced sugary drinks, burgers, chicken wings. You know, it's not fine dining by any stretch. And so I would love to see Ocean Drive, and then, of course, it serving as a catalyst for the surrounding area to be, you know, a lot more sort of high end, a more pleasant experience for residents and tourists, and not chase after the low end market.
Hasn't that market been driven by demand though? The Ocean Drive you describe in the 90s was coming out of course, a very, very sleepy time in the 70s and 80s and early 90s with relatively low property values, high vacancies, which allowed the artistic and creative community to come in at relatively affordable rates. Those days are far gone, Commissioner, aren't they?
Yeah, there's no doubt that, you know, property values have gone up, rents have gone up, and, you know, a lot of the, you know, restaurants now, you know, the other thing, Miami Beach now is competing with other great areas in Miami. You have Wynwood, the Design District, Brickell, you know, the Gables even, Coconut Grove is making a renaissance. So, you know, Miami Beach has competition just locally, and we have to compete. And right now we're competing on the low end, and we're losing the battle. Many of the great restaurants that are opening are happening in Wynwood that used to be Miami Beach. And so we need to do everything we can to kind of stimulate, you know, the demand for, you know, great retail, great restaurants, the boutique hotels. And so, you know, part of the 2 a.m. is with an eye towards changing the way things are done on Ocean Drive in South Beach.
That's Miami Beach Commissioner Ricky Arriola. Early voting is underway for Miami Beach, Miami, Hialeah, and Homestead. Election Day is a week from tomorrow. Pilar Uribe is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.